I think last time I put on the board four different positions that people hold. The Westcott and Hort position, the majority text position, where they feel like the original text is preserved in the majority of manuscripts, which are minuscules, which then, of course, supports the TR. Go ahead.
I have a couple of questions.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
There's a couple of questions on the test. Is there going to be anything on the Old Testament text?
No, not on the final test.
On the papyri, do we need to deal with history, like on the...
No.
No. Okay. And could you explain rule number six?
Rule number six, least doctrinal bias?
Yeah.
Any reading which has a doctrinal bias is maybe giving a motive for a scribe to change one reading to another. So if we can look for a doctrinal motive in changing one reading to another, then the reading which is provides the least doctrinal bias would be the correct reading. I'm trying to think of an example of that. Well, 1 John 5:7 might be an example. Including it is an obvious bias there, since Trinitarians have championed it and so forth. They seem to be biased, very biased in favor of it. Perhaps that means we should omit it. If they're biased today in favor of it, maybe the whole thing originated from bias. 1 Timothy 3:16 might be an example of where God was manifest in the flesh. There may be a bias that way. On the other hand, who was manifest in the flesh, there may be a bias that way. So when you have a pure controversy, it's hard to... both sides would claim bias. So if a reading seems to contradict a doctrine, well, that rule would support it then, because it would offer, be the more difficult reading too, so it would probably be rule two. But anytime we can identify a motive that would cause a scribe to change something to something else, the probability is that that he changed it and that the other was the original. That's all we're looking for, is probabilities. It seems more probable that 1 John 5:7 would be added than would be left out, because of the bias doctrinally towards the verse. Another question.
The other question is, there's a Greek English interlinear had the King James and NIV in the library. Is that a good source to have for your own use?
I'm not familiar with it. Why don't you bring it in at the break here and we'll take a look at it. Another question. Position 1, Westcott and Hort. Position 2, majority text and the TR. Position 3, the TR is inspired. These people are very close-minded. They offer forth many outrageous claims and statements that are very hard to support, but they believe God providentially inspired the TR, and anybody that thinks otherwise is a heretic, and they're not afraid to tell you so. Fourth position is the King James inspired, and that seems like a real far-fetched position. The surprise to me is how many people hold to that position. Whole groups hold to that position. It originates out of the Baptist group. Now, you can be sure the King James-inspired group wouldn't originate out of the Lutheran Church or the Episcopalian Church. They're not even sure the original's inspired. They're so liberal they would never take a dogmatic stand on anything. They're not even sure homosexuals aren't saved. The King James-inspired group would have to be found among very fundamental conservatives who are very dogmatic about a lot of things, that being one of them. There are some Spirit-filled churches that hold that position. It's predominantly a Baptist position. There's quite a controversy erupting in the Baptist church over that, and it's splitting the church.
Can you explain number two again?
Number two, the majority text. Those are scholars that argue the text as Receptus is not so much as inspired, but just textual principles in their mind support it. They prefer the text as Receptus on textual grounds. And their argument is that it's a majority text. The majority of manuscripts support it, and therefore it, you know, it's not so much weight as numbers. Not so much quality as quantity. The Westcott and Hort school is going by quality. A 4th century manuscript has more weight than 50 10th century manuscripts. That's their point of view. Question?
The majority texts are just minuscules.
90% of all manuscripts are minuscules, 10th century and later. And they basically are using those since they would overrule Aleph and B, since there's so many of them. It's like the UN. The U.S. gets one voice, and there's 79 puny communist countries that each get one voice. They outvote us on everything. So manuscript B doesn't stand up to that because the minuscules outnumber it, and so many of them support the text as Receptus. This has been controversial ever since Erasmus's day. Textual judgments have been controversial. Down through the centuries, there's been anathemas cast and hurled back and forth across theological lines. The subject is not so much theological, it's more which Bible, which Greek text should we use. Interestingly enough, no doctrine that I know of is affected by which text to use. If you're a pre-trib rapturist, it's just you're a Baptist, that's all. It doesn't matter whether you're TR or Westcott and Hort. I know of no doctrine that really is affected by the whole controversy. And yet, they make this one of the primary controversies in the church today, even though it really has no effect on our overall life or Christian testimony or anything like that. A lot of technical questions and claims and accusations and so forth. I mean, it's a real field of controversy. Go ahead.
Did the TR use any of the early manuscripts for information at all, or did they follow
them? Rasmus put out his test TR in 1516.
He couldn't have done that.
No. As far as we know, Rasmus used 8 manuscripts, none of them complete, all of them 10th century or later. Go ahead.
Do these controversies, is it like something that's just been at a low boil always, or is it a few characters have come up here and there and without a commitment issue?
Well, Bergen, of course, made it a huge issue in the late 1800s. And in the middle and early 1800s, it was a huge issue, with the majority of the church heavily favoring the TR and the King James, and the scholars that were promoting something else and changes were viewed on as heretical and liberal. Westcott and Hort came along, and of course others before them, but by the time they came along, the whole church basically was brought over to the other position. Most of the lay people, see, they're not in on what's going on. They don't know anything about this, and they're pretty much going to go on hearsay, and a lot of the arguments become very emotional. They don't have the background to evaluate the arguments, and so they're kind of caught in the middle somewhere. And if the conservative voice claiming inspiration and we follow the Bible, hey, that appeals to people that really love the Bible. And when they can see that Westcott and Hort are liberal in a lot of areas, along with Metzger, these other people, certainly they lose credibility among Bible believers, Bible lovers. Serious Bible students are easily swayed over to this position because they lack any technical background to evaluate it. So it's been a big issue in the church up until Westcott and Hort. Then it kind of died down a little bit. It seemed like the other side had lost a lot of its oomph. Only a few people were really promoting that. that nobody took them that seriously, seemed to die down. This King James inspired thing, that's a new wrinkle. And I think that's pretty much limited to this generation. The primary spokesman for that is Peter Ruckman out of Florida. And by sheer weight of his personality alone, he commands a following. And he can argue with anybody on anything. I'm sure he could promote the moon is made of green cheese and get a following. He's a real dynamic personality. I think the Baptists loved their Bibles, and probably the majority of them loved the King James. He came along with the idea of the King James inspired, and that offers a certain amount of security to people. It is appealing to people that love the Bible, and of course, being a genius, sure, he convinced them real quick. Has quite a following along that line. Statement says, God has only authorized the King James. You cannot be saved unless you read the King James. These are the kind of statements that are being made. God preserve the TR. There's an underground satanic plot seeking to destroy the King James. All scholars who reject the TR are Bible-hating apostates. A lot of very emotive statements are being made. These are emotionally charged statements that immediately provoke a defense, a response, an argument. Now, with the background we have so far in textual criticism, we're in a place to evaluate a good section of this. One thing that I think is really important that we keep in mind is that the whole area of controversy is 1/8 part of the New Testament. And if we eliminate all the spelling errors and other such things, we're down to about 1/1000th part of the New Testament. And all this rhetoric over 1/1000th part of the New Testament. And it doesn't affect any doctrine, and it wouldn't change all the denominational bickering over various other peculiarities. In fact, if God came down and providentially gave us an inspired text, we'd still have 80-some English translations. We'd still have 400-odd denominations. So an inspired text isn't really going to affect the church world that much, nor even Christians' lives. Now, the TR itself, it's obvious that it was pretty much hastily done and was done on a limited textual basis. The 1550 Stephanus edition differs from the 1633 Elsevier edition in 287 places. Both of them claim to be the TR. One originated the nickname, and the other is called the TR, and it's published as such. 287 differences between the two. Now, if God inspired them, why are there these differences? The 1633 edition of Elsevier that originated the name Textus Receptus. What? 287 places. Now, that's really minute. The King James translators themselves did not believe that the TR was perfect. They list variant readings, not very many, but they list some variant readings in the marginal notes, which shows they didn't believe the TR was inspired, and had they had more manuscripts, they would have made more marginal notes, I'm sure, maybe even changed the text on account of it. I don't want to convey the idea that the TR is full of errors. I don't think it is full of errors. But I think that one area of textual criticism, that 1,000th part, in light of all the evidence we now have, should be updated in view of the evidence. A 16th century work based on a dozen or so manuscripts should not be claimed to be inspired. We should submit ourselves to a 20th century work based on several thousand manuscripts and also the latest scholarship. There's no virtue in holding on to antiquity, holding on to superstition. Westcott and Hort said that out of 500 pages of the Greek New Testament, there's only about a half a page which any question remained as to the wording of the original. Now, they don't say that there's half a page of variance. They just say there's half a page of which there's real question. Meaning the other variants, they feel like they've settled satisfactorily, and in their mind there isn't any question. Why do people believe the Textus Receptus to be superior and or inspired and or the King James inspired? Why do they believe that? This is a growing movement. It's splitting fundamental churches, and it's bound to come our way, and we're bound to get embroiled in it. Well, there are many arguments in favor of it. And let me go over a number of these arguments. And then I would like to talk about the motive, perhaps, behind some of these arguments. I do believe I have identified a number of things that put a person in a certain vein where he is going to be vulnerable to this type of thing. Let me give you these right now. What causes people to hold this viewpoint? Well, one reason is ignorance of textual matters. Ignorance of textual matters. Number two, insecurity and a desire for simplistic answers to very complex questions. Man is basically insecure, and the more immature and the more insecure he is, the quicker he is to grab onto and dogmatically assert simplistic answers to complex questions. Now, this is common in new converts. New converts will often be dogmatic on answers. You know, why a person didn't get healed? I consider that to be a very complicated question with perhaps maybe 20 to 100 answers. But a new convert will often know why that person didn't get healed. I mean, he's got it all figured out. And he's got other answers figured out to very complicated questions. Plus a basic insecurity. Rather than learn Greek, study textual criticism, it's far easier to dogmatically believe the King James is inspired and throw all the rest away. People have always tended towards black and white answers rather than be secure in their position and study the complexities of the issue. It's kind of like the more you know, the less dogmatic you become. Because the more you know, there's a lot involved. Go ahead.
Now, why would Ruffman fall into this category with the amount of knowledge and security? Do you think that maybe he's got a real insecurity there that we can tackle something like that with all his understanding?
That's only my second reason why people fall into it. Let me give you number three.
Right.
Calvinism. Almost without exception, people involved in this are Calvinists. The providence of God. An underlying thing under everything is that God has providentially done everything, and that He has providentially preserved the original for us today. And of course, this could go back to insecurity, because if God didn't preserve it, then we're kind of wandering in the sea of questions. But this Calvinism is the root of it. Believe me, this is a big part of it. Number four, tradition. Tradition is another thing that has gotten people into this. Resistance to change. people are biased to the King James, prefer the King James, love the King James, and so if somebody comes along telling them that it's inspired of God, I mean, they would love to believe that. I mean, why not? I mean, they already have a bias towards it. It's their favorite translation. Number five, a backlash against the trend of liberalism. Oftentimes, people who hold this view champion their fundamentalism and feel as though they are on some kind of righteous crusade against liberalism. My own feeling that believing the King James is inspired does nothing for liberalism, nothing against it at all. To me, it's an extreme position, but the more far out the liberals get, it seems like the more far out the conservatives get as a reaction to it. And so to me, a lot of it is an overreaction to liberalism, trying to take a stand, got to take a stand against all this. I think insecurity is in here, woven through. Now, Ruckman is a genius and so forth and the other things, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he doesn't have an insecurity towards him and God, and towards him and God's Word. You can be secure in a lot of human knowledge and be very insecure in spiritual matters. And a Calvinist can really walk on thin ice. Eternal security is a big security. And without it, it's like you can really be in an insecure place. And so believing that the Bible we now have in our hand is inspired can be a big security for you. Those are basically some of the things that I think are behind this position. Let me give you arguments in favor of the TR. Number one, Matthew 5:18. Till heaven and earth pass, not one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Matthew 5:18. They reason from this, it is unthinkable that God would inspire the actual words of the Scriptures and then turn it over to men to miscopy, misuse, and basically mess the whole thing up. If God inspired the originals, He must have inspired the copyists as well as anyone else down through the ages. Well, taking this to its logical conclusion, Peter Ruckman states that God even inspired the English translators in 1611. Taking it even further, He could inspire the reader and inspire all of our actions, so that if God would take the time to give us an inspired book, maybe He'd take the time to providentially get us to live it all. But they've only taken it to the degree that the King James inspired, and they've left the interpretation up to you, which obviously isn't inspired. Of course, the King James obviously not inspired either. Now, in answer to this thinking, God did inspire the original, 2 Timothy 3:16. God did not preserve the originals. He could have kept them in a glass case with a little humidifier dial in there and a thermostat. It would just be one more fetish in the church. The power is in the Word, not in the autograph. The fact of the matter is, God did leave it in the hands of copyists, and there are no two Greek manuscripts that are identical. No two Greek manuscripts are identical. That ought to be obvious. Which one did God preserve? Even the TR is based on textual criticism. Now, of course, they believe that God inspired the TR so that the textual work that was done there did correct and update the manuscripts, etc. The point of the matter is, until the TR was inspired, God didn't preserve. Go ahead.
Do you have any other evidence substantiating?
Well, there's just the arguments for it, which I'm heading into, so I don't know about evidence per se. I mean, other than the golden plates of Joseph Smith, there isn't a whole lot of evidence. They're just arguments that are used. Any other questions? Now, it's obvious God did not inspire the copyists because the copyists made many errors. See, that's just the facts. You can't argue against that. And so to argue that in the 1500s God inspired the TR is to overlook the fact that he left the church for 15 centuries with all kinds of manuscripts mixed up. So why does God return to the scene again and clear up the whole mess? See, I don't believe he did. I believe he left it in man's hand, and it's where man has put it today. God, that's the same argument that the Catholic Church uses to claim inspiration. They argue that God would not leave the church without the truth for all these years. Fact of the matter is that God has left the church without the light for centuries. He's let the Catholics make a mess of it. He's let them suppress the scriptures, suppress the truth, teach all kinds of false doctrines, pass superstition off as the gospel. God has allowed the truth to be corrupted by the corrupt church system. God has not only allowed the copyists to make errors, he's allowed the scripture to be taken from the people for hundreds of years. Then he's allowed the scripture to be kept in Latin, which none of them could read. None of them, meaning none of the lay people. In 2 Kings 22, the book of the law was lost during the reign of King Manasseh. 2 Kings 22, God allowed the book of the law to be lost. And when Josiah read it, he came upon the passages of God's judgment, and he knew they were in trouble. Now, Matthew 5:18 does not say, until every jot and tittle has been copied. It just says that nothing shall fail of all God has said. It doesn't have anything to do with copying. The idea is that everything God said will come to pass. It doesn't have anything to do with copying it accurately. Now, there are four different editions of the TR, Erasmus, Stephanus, Bez, and Elzevir, and even later ones than that. Deciding the 1550 edition of Stephanus is inspired of God, that's just wishful thinking. A second argument. The TR is superior because 90% or so of all existing copies support it. This is the majority text argument. It's superior because it has the majority of manuscripts supporting it. The answer to that is, it is true that the majority of manuscripts favor the TR. But this is not the criteria that experts go by. Quality is to be preferred over quantity. The majority of manuscripts date from the 10th to the 12th century to the 14th century. The minority of the manuscripts are 5th century and earlier. Early copies are rare. That only ought to be logical. Older coins are rarer than newer coins. Older anything is rarer than newer anything. Older copies are hard to come by. They're rare. But it's believed they represent an earlier text. They're closer to the autographs. New Testament manuscripts before the 4th century were written on papyri. This very perishable material is undoubtedly, along with persecutions and other things, a big reason why very few of them remain today. Only about 80 papyri have survived the climate and other factors to exist in our day, and all of them, I believe, come out of Egypt. Now, concerning the majority text, Wilbur Pickering, I know you've all heard of Wilbur Pickering, he's got a book in the library, by the way, he is one who argues the majority text. He has a book. He admits that Erasmus's text differs from the majority text in about 1,000 places. He admits that the TR is not the majority text, but there would have to be about 1,000 changes in the TR to move it into a majority text. 1 John 5:7, see, would have to be dropped from the TR because it's only found in four manuscripts, and of course two of those in the margin. See, 1 John 5:7 would never pass the majority test. So the TR would be changed in 1,000 places to bring it up to a majority text. Now, early manuscripts are believed to be more accurate and reflect less copyist errors than later century manuscripts. It is not surprising, on the simple logic of this, that experts choose to place the weight of testimony on the minority of manuscripts, not the late date majority. This is not a bias, this is just merely the balance of probabilities and the knowledge of how these things go together. Manuscripts that date close to the originals are given, of course, more weight in textual judgments. Also, the reason that the Byzantine text type contains the majority of manuscripts perhaps may be that it is the only major area where Greek was spoken as a living language from about the end of the 3rd century and on. In other words, we have, you know, hundreds of 10th century and later manuscripts. They're all the Byzantine text type. Why do we have so many of those manuscripts? Because that area of the empire was still speaking Greek and therefore still copying manuscripts and reading them and using them, whereas the other areas of the empire were no longer reading Greek and were reading versions. So down in Egypt, they're not reading Greek manuscripts anymore. They're reading the Egyptian translation of it. And so there aren't going to be lots of Greek copies coming out of the Alexandrian text type. The fall of Constantinople to the Turks in 1453 caused scholars to flee all across Europe, bringing their Greek books and manuscripts with them. And there were many Byzantine manuscripts that came. That may be a reason why the Byzantine text type contains the majority, because Greek was the language of that particular area of the empire. It can also be shown that the King James does not follow the majority text, nor does the TR. I said 1 John 5:7 certainly isn't a majority reading. Revelation 22:19, quote, the book of life, that is found in no Greek manuscript. Acts 9:6 is found in no Greek manuscript. These come from the Latin Vulgate, I believe. Acts 8:37 comes from a very few handful. It certainly isn't a majority Greek reading as well. TR and King James advocates are extremely contradictory. Ruckman believes the King James is inspired. Zane Hodges revise the TR and would change the King James in about 1,000 places. Zane Hodges is another man like Wilbur Pickering that holds position number 2. Those in position 4 use Wilbur Pickering and Zane Hodges' arguments to refute position 1, because they're the most scholarly and textually accurate arguments among position 2, 3, and 4. Position 2, the majority text, at least argues from a textual criticism standpoint. Position 3 argues from a Calvinistic, dogmatic, inspired standpoint, and they don't have a whole lot of arguments. Go ahead.
You also probably consider that there'd be a lot of fatalism involved in that.
Yes. I call it more Calvinism, but legalism, yes. Well, it's amazing how people can dogmatically hold an absurd viewpoint. I mean, Christians of all people tend to be the most biased and dishonest with facts. And let me say this. Unsaved people and scientists that argue evolution are obviously, many of them, in a deceitfully blind position. I mean, they willingly cover up evidence that contradicts evolution. And I think that Christians that hold the King James Inspired are kind of in the same position. They just kind of seem to throw away a whole bunch of facts and data and continue to hold that position because they think that that's it. Now, Zane Hodges and Wilbur Pickering argue for position two. Ruckman uses many of their statements to dethrone position one, while he himself is contradicted by Zane Hodges and Wilbur Pickering, who would change the King James and don't believe that's inspired. Jay Green published the King James II Bible, in which he revised the King James from the TR. He acknowledges that the TR is imperfect and should be updated according to the majority text. Another TR group has published the New King James, which Ruckman totally blasts. He calls it the latest, the latest perversion and so forth. But they're a TR group, and they argue with Ruckman. These correct the King James, but accuse Westcott and Hort of corrupting the Word of God. There's so much inconsistency here. Another argument. Number three. Liberals follow Westcott and Hort while conservatives follow TR. What could be clearer? Also, the men that God's used the most over the centuries followed the TR and read the good old King James. The men whom God has used the most over the centuries used the TR and read the King James. Moody, Spurgeon, Finney, you name them, earlier than the 1900s, and he read the King James. Now, let's answer this argument. First of all, liberals and conservatives. The entire controversy is within the conservative ranks, since liberals obviously don't care. They don't even care if the original's inspired, much less the King James or the TR. Now, it's not just conservatives read the TR and liberals read Westcott and Hort. That's not really accurate. The majority of conservatives follow Westcott and Hort as well. Of course, these TR advocates label as liberals, because they have redefined liberal to mean anybody that doesn't follow the TR is a liberal. But honestly and objectively, the conservative denominations that have been called conservatives, while they read the King James, don't believe it's inspired and basically follow the Westcott and Hort text type. I mean, the Westcott and Hort text. And also read NAS and many others. Now, those that believe the King James inspired call themselves Bible believers. Of course, the implication, you that read NAS, guess where that leaves you? Now, men of God over the centuries have followed the King James not by choice, but because of tradition and there being nothing else, and it being advantageous to preach from the King James, since that's the popular translation. We do the same. The men of God called the Pilgrims who came to America favored the Geneva translation, not the King James. Finally, Calvinism is the main proof behind the TR. Those advocating this continually appeal to the providence of God as their proof for events to believe that God guided Erasmus to produce the TR. There's nothing but Calvinistic faith behind that. I'm not sure God guided Erasmus to do anything, if you've read his life. It's just as logical to believe that God guided Westcott and Hort to remove the remaining mistakes of Erasmus and updated his text on superior manuscripts. Go ahead. Erasmus was a humanist and a Catholic priest. So, but Erasmus did support the Reformation by ridiculing the Catholic Church and all of its inconsistencies. But if you're going to throw mud on Westcott and Hort for being liberal, certainly Erasmus goes down the tube as well. You can't call him a Bible believer, and you can't call him a conservative. Go ahead.
I think Jack Chick comes right out and calls Westcott and Hort Catholic, somehow one of the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I think he stands in the position with the TR, which came from Erasmus. He pretty much worships it, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of strange to get it backwards.
It is also argued that God preserved the Byzantine text type. But the Byzantine text type was preserved in one small corner of the world, while the Latin Vulgate held preeminence over everything. And the Latin Vulgate is primarily the Western text type. Of course, being of the Latin part of the world, the Western part of the world. But that's just another argument. The Alexandrian text type appears to be the oldest and most accurate. Some even allege that God will not bless the Westcott and Hort text or the New American Standard or anything that doesn't come from the TR. God will not bless corrupt fountainheads of truth. Let me answer this. God doesn't necessarily bless the TR or the King James either. The Greek Orthodox Church, which is the Eastern Empire, the Eastern arm of the Roman Catholic Church, called the Greek Orthodox Church. Remember the Catholic Church split, Western and Eastern? The Greek Orthodox Church is the Byzantine area of the empire, and they've used TR manuscripts for all of their existence. And has God blessed that Greek Orthodox Church? Look at all the false doctrine they're in. The NAS, dated 1971, as to complete Old and New Testament, and let's give that time to see if God will bless it. God will bless what men believe, what men trust, what men open up their hearts to. This type of argument is based on sheer ignorance. For Martin Luther received truth from the Latin Vulgate. The early Christians and apostles read the Septuagint. And there are many genuinely born-again Christians today that read all kinds of translations, from Phillips to Living. Billy Graham even hands out his Living as a freebie in his crusades. And so the argument that conservatives read King James and TR and liberals the other, you're calling Billy Graham a liberal. God has not endorsed any translation. God has not endorsed any denomination. God hasn't endorsed any one denomination. But he hasn't endorsed any one translation. Any church that opens up to him will receive a move of his spirit, and anybody that opens up to this word of God will receive truth and will begin to move forward in God's spirit based on the word. Argument number four. Greek manuscripts behind Westcott and Hort and modern versions come from Alexandria, Egypt, type of the world. The Alexandrian text type. They could not be the best manuscripts because they have been in the possession of Origen, who was a real screwball, so to speak, and many others, even the Roman Catholic Church. These might have, and they accuse them of outright, changes of the text to suit their own teachings. These have changed the text to suit their own teachings. And God would not use liberals to restore the true text. T.R. King James advocates love to publish all the faults and heresies of Westcott and Hort and other textual critics while publishing the piety of the King James translators and other men favoring the T.R. So they're constantly painting the King James translators as spiritually men, spiritual men who prayed for hours in the translation and all that, while Westcott and Hort were over praying to Mary and some other Lulus. Now, some facts of history concerning this. Number one, the Old Testament has been transmitted to us almost exclusively by unsaved, Christ-hating Jews. The Masoretic text, which both T.R., King James, Westcott, and NAS all agree on, since there's only one text type in the Old Testament, we all agree on that. The Masoretic text has been exclusively given to us by unsaved, Christ-rejecting Jews. This was produced by several generations of Masoretes active from 500 to 1000 AD. There is no evidence that they changed anything to justify their rejection of Christ. There's no evidence that the Jews have tampered with the text, changed Isaiah 9:6, or any other passage. There's no evidence that they've changed any of those passages. Number two, the TR text has been transmitted to us by the Eastern Greek Orthodox Church, which is basically just the Catholic Church. The two churches did not even split until 1054 over the supremacy of the Pope. So before 1054, it was all the one Catholic Church, which has given us the Byzantine text type. Essentially, then, the RCC has also brought us the TR. So if they're going to say that Westcott and Hort are liberals and the TR is conservatives, they just haven't come to grips with the facts of history. Number three. Go ahead.
What year did you say
this? 1054. The split occurred between the Eastern Orthodox and the Western. Number three, Erasmus is no conservative. He dedicated his 1516 edition to Pope Leo X. Also, Erasmus used the Latin Vulgate instead of Greek manuscripts in some places. So whatever faults one may bring against Westcott and Hort, the same basic faults can be brought against the TR. It's just a matter of looking at history. Finally, the main reason the earliest manuscripts come from Egypt is just a coincidence of climate. Dry climates enabled fragile papyri manuscripts to escape decay and destruction, and so it's merely a coincidence of the climate. Also, we might say there's no evidence whatsoever that Origen or anybody else changed certain scriptures to suit any particular doctrine. Now, we know there were undoubtedly scribal changes based on doctrine. See, we know that. That is why we have Rule 6. But there's no evidence of any systematic attempt to change a number of passages on a doctrine. Variants are pretty random throughout the New Testament. And even God was manifest in the flesh, we said that may be purely transcriptional, since when you look at who and God as abbreviations, they look very similar. If Origen did change some passages, he certainly forgot to change a lot of others. So, if there were liberals in Egypt trying to tamper with the text, they did the poorest job of it, because they tamper with two or three verses here and ignore 25 others. There just doesn't seem to be. Besides that, manuscripts of the Alexandrian text type do not teach any different doctrines than the TR. That whole argument is totally ridiculous. Question?
Also, couldn't you say that everything that was produced in the school of Alexandria, Egypt, all the philosophy and all that, basically produced the Godhead doctrines that the Catholic Church knows anyways?
So, you could say that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Take a 5-minute one here.